1992, Columbia Pictures released the movie A Few Good Men. It was an American Armed Forces legal drama which centered around the court-martial of two Marines. And the two Marines were being charged with the murder of another Marine. The most famous scene that comes from this movie centers around a court scene. And the drama is thick in this scene. Jack Nicholson is a high-ranking officer. He's sitting in the witness seat. Tom Cruise is the military prosecutor, and he is interrogating the witness, Jack Nicholson. The emotion in the courtroom is at a peak. The climax of the scene is approaching, and this is the most memorable scene.
Colonel Jessup, did you order the code red?
You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
There it is, the phrase. You can't handle the truth. I still remember when this movie came out in the early 90s. And that tagline got stuck in people's minds so that you couldn't hardly go anywhere without hearing that tagline. You can't handle the truth. A teenager comes home late, past his curfew. His mother is sitting up waiting for him. And she says, "Son, where have you been?" And he says, "Mom, I would tell you, but you can't handle the truth." In restaurants, in bars, you'd be talking with your family or your guests at the low rumble heading, airing all over the place, but inevitably, at some point in time, you'd hear some guy bellow out, "You can't handle the truth." I had a friend that was a mechanic. I took my car to him in those days. I went back and I said, "What's wrong with it?" And he said, "You can't handle the truth." And he was right. But you know, I don't know that there's ever been a time in possibly the history of our country when there has been such an aggressive resistance from this culture, where there's been active rebellion in this culture against the truth. Therefore, this morning, I want to begin a new series of messages. I'm calling it Questions Our Culture Is Asking. And they are asking a lot of questions today. But perhaps the most fundamental question that they are dealing with, they may not even know that they're dealing with, but the most basic of all questions of this life is this: does truth, with a capital T, does truth really exist on this planet? Is there really a foundational path that humans are to take in this life? You know, it's a scary time for any parent when their child leaves home. I mean, there you are, new parents. You bring home this incredible new life, and your schedule, your life gets turned upside down with this new baby. But you give care and love and concern to this child as he grows up through his toddler years and on into his preteen years. And you become his number one fan. When the world rains down on him, you bring sunshine into his life because you are his parent, and he is utterly dependent upon you. And then he walks out the door. It's time for his ship to sail. College or work? It's time for him to step from your doorway and begin to make his own life in this world. But what will he do? What direction will he take? What path in this life will he find for himself? Setting sail, what path will they choose? It's a question every one of us has asked. It's a question you may be asking now. It's certainly a question our culture is asking. What path, what road is there? A fundamental, foundational path for me to take that will support me, that will be strong, and that will not collapse. Does that road exist? And in the midst of all the clanging voices today, in the midst of all the opinions, in the midst of all the chaos and even anarchy, and in the midst of the natural hardships and difficulties that life brings, is there a path underneath me that will support me if I stand upon it and not collapse in the days to come? It's an important question. It's a very real question. Are there, or is there, a set of immutable truths that govern this planet? Are there a set of facts that are trustworthy enough and true enough for us to follow? Foundational pillars. Do they exist that will allow me to build a home that is sound and strong, one that can launch our children out into this world? Does that kind of truth exist that if I walk with it, will support me to the end? You know, oftentimes, and I've done this numerous times in my life, and I bet that you have too. When I face a quandary, when I face a difficulty that I don't know how to find my way through, when I have faced issues, let's just say in the ministry, that I've never experienced before, and I want to know the best way to navigate through these difficulties, I would often call my father-in-law. And we do that. We have someone who is senior to us that we deem trustworthy. Someone who has been down that road, experienced what I'm about to go through. Someone who seems to have great wisdom and understanding about life and its issues. That's a smart thing to do. And that's why we're going to do that very thing this morning. But we're not going to call on just any old man. We have an old man in particular. His name is Solomon. And Solomon, when we meet him, is a very, very interesting individual. Solomon's name represents wisdom. When God asked Solomon what he would want, that God would grant it, Solomon asked for wisdom. Therefore, his name is synonymous with wisdom. Solomon was one of Israel's greatest kings, and he led Israel to expand their borders, and God blessed them with great, abundant wealth. Therefore, this morning, for the next few minutes, we're going to sit before this great man, arguably the wisest man and the greatest mind that has ever lived. When we visit Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes, he's in his older days, his golden years. But we find an older man, not retired, going fishing every day. But instead, we find an older man sitting back and writing a very thoughtful and purposeful treatise on life. That is the book of Ecclesiastes. In truth, the book of Ecclesiastes is an autobiography of the man Solomon. You've heard the story of the six blind men who tried to describe an elephant, right? It's a common story. One guy, blind, walks up to the elephant and begins to feel along his side, the side of an elephant. And so he concludes that an elephant is just like a wall, because that's what he felt. Another guy walked up to the elephant and grabbed his legs and said, "No, an elephant is like a pillar." And another blind man went behind and grabbed the elephant by the tail and said, "No, an elephant is like a rope." Well, that's kind of what Solomon does in the book of Ecclesiastes. He walks in and he takes hold of a piece of life. He walks in blindly, and he takes hold thinking, "I think that looks good. I think that might bring me real life. I think this might be the path I ought to follow." And so we are allowed to sit back and read and watch and hear of Solomon walking through these steps in his life. And he is giving us his biography, autobiography. "This is what I did," he's saying. "I tried to figure out the elephant of life. And I grabbed him here, and I grabbed him there, and I grabbed him there." And the theme of Ecclesiastes is vanity, meaninglessness, worthlessness. As we walk with Solomon through these stages of his life, these experiments of life, we can group in categories the things that he did. And we're just going to, again, barely scan the surface. But we'll look at these three things. Solomon sought to find truth, life, in these three ways: knowing, playing, and owning. In other words, knowing, he took an intellectual path. "What I need is understanding. What I need to know is to solve puzzles. I need to get my mind around mysteries. I need to be wise, the smartest of all." So he took the knowing path. Secondly, he took the playing path. This was his party boy path. If life's not found in learning, then life is going to be found in boogieing, partying, playing, and then finally owning lifestyles of the rich and famous. No one could compare to the wealth of the King Solomon. But first, and quickly, let's look at knowing. In Ecclesiastes 1, follow me as I read verses 12 through 18. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task, living life, this burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. So he says, I've set my heart to seek out truth, and so come with me in this journey. And he says in 14, because I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. And indeed, all is vanity and a grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness, and I've gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also a grasping after the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases in knowledge increases in sorrow. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. Now, again, let me remind you that Solomon was deemed the wisest man ever to live, so we are not dealing with some lunatic. We're not dealing with an old man suffering from dementia. This is holy wisdom as we follow Solomon through this elephant life journey. Again, he tells us as much in verse 16. Look, I have attained greatness and gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. But then he says in 18, in much wisdom is grief, and he who increases in knowledge increases in sorrow. Solomon said, look, I've been there. I have gained more learning and more understanding and more wisdom than anyone that has ever lived. I understand things that normal people can't get their minds around. I can see through mysteries and see truth there. I've been there. I've done this. I have a greater mind than any with me or before me, and I'm telling you that the end of all the degrees and all of the study and all the books and all of the learning is sorrow. Life is not found, he says, in learning, in intellect, in degrees. So he says, let's look at the elephant from a different angle. Playing. Solomon says, I'm done with the dusty books and degrees. It's time to party hardy. And he gives us in the scripture two ways that Solomon got his party going. One was laughter, and two was liquor. Look with me. In Ecclesiastes 2, 1 through 2, Solomon said, I said to my heart, come now, I'll test you with mirth. Mirth is gladness, joy. Whatever my heart wants, I'll follow. I will test you with mirth. Heart, I'll test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But then he said, I said of laughter, madness. And of mirth, what does it accomplish? It's vanity. Solomon said, I decided that I was going to live my life in laughter. Whatever made me laugh, whatever brought me joy, whatever thing I was drawn to, I did. But he said the end of it left me hollow, lacking, and in effect it was meaningless. He turned then to liquor. Look in chapter 2, verse 3a. I searched my heart and how to gratify my flesh with wine. Apparently, that little test didn't go so well because he wrote in Proverbs 20, verse 1, that wine is a mocker and strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it, by wine, is not wise. And so Solomon said, I'm done with the books, I'm done with the hard study, I'm going to play. I tried just having a good time, just going out and enjoying people and laughing, but life's not found there. So I turned to wine and I filled my soul with the fruit of the grape. But he said, all I found was that wine mocked me, that strong drink changed me. Life's not found there. And so Solomon made one more turn in this journey, and that was to owning or having or possessing. Ecclesiastes 2, verses 4 through 11. Solomon said, I made my works great. I built myself houses, I planted myself vineyards, I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants. I had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold, special treasures of kings of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers and the delights of the sons of men and musical instruments of all kind. And so I became great, and I excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from my labor. And I looked on all the works that my hands had done and on the labor in which I had toiled. And indeed, it was all vanity. Grasping for the wind. There's no profit under the sun. Here's Solomon. Said, I've got gold. I've got possessions. I can buy myself anything and everything I want. And so he did. Can you imagine? Seriously. Having more money than you could ever spend. So that you get on Amazon and you buy a page of things at a time. You see anything you want, and it's just a drop in the bucket for you to purchase. You see a house you like, buy another house. You see more land, buy more land. Money is no object. You've got more than you can ever spend, and you can have anything and everything that you want. And it will be called yours because you bought it. You purchased it. You own it. You're powerful. You're strong. You're accomplished. And Solomon says, and I looked out over all that I had accomplished and that I owned, that I bought, that I worked. And he says, as I stood over my kingdom, he said, I felt that I was on the wrong track again. He said, it just left me hollow. It was vanity, meaninglessness. Well, it's obvious at this point that Solomon's at a loss. Grabbing at the elephant of life, nothing so far makes sense. He can't figure out that absolute truth, that path that runs right down the middle of life. He can't find it until his conclusion of this experiment. And the conclusion of his experiment is found in the last two verses of the very last chapter. Ecclesiastes 12, 13 through 14, he says, let us hear the conclusion of this whole matter. And here it is. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is man's all, for God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Solomon says, this experiment is concluded. I've chased absolute truth. I've chased life back and forth in this planet. I've withheld nothing from myself. I've done it all. Whoever has it, I've gotten more. Who's ever done it, I did it longer. Who's ever been there, I was there first. I've been there. I've done it all. And he says, hear me when I tell you that there is an absolute path to walk through this life. That there is a righteous way. That there is a fundamental road that is strong and sturdy and will not collapse. And it's the only one to be found on this planet. Fear God. Keep his commandments. Walk with God through this life. And the fulfillment he intends will be ours.